Second hour on this hot Thursday here in Nashville. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. We always have fun with our next guest, Ryan McGee from ESPN and ESPN.com. Marty and McGee, I guess he has chosen Omaha over Nashville this weekend. Is that true, Ryan?
Yeah, it wasn't a choice, really. It was your I mean, I appreciate you thinking that, you know, I just call ESPN and go, hey, you know what? I'm doing this and I'm not doing that. That's not really how it works.
You don't have that pull?
I think Marty's doing his podcast. Not Marty McGee, the other thing he does. He's doing that, I think, from Nashville this weekend. So he'll be there. And
okay.
when we do Marty McGee on Saturday morning, I will be in Omaha and Marty will be in Nashville. So,
well, yeah, I mean, so. I just figured, Ryan, you know, with Marty and McGee, I'd turn on and you get, you know, one of you's camping and you're doing a show, one of you's camping, one of you's in a studio. I'm figuring you guys had the pull to do whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah, well, it feels that way, but it's not a. I greatly appreciate you thinking that that's how it is, but it's they still. If Mickey Mouse calls and says you're going to this and not going to that, then I say yes, sir, and I get on the point.
One of these days, you'll have a different story to tell. I'm sure of it. So let's talk about Omaha. Things are winding down. So one ticket has been punched into the national championship game. Ole Miss finally lost, and Arkansas has pushed that thing to the rubber match now. Arkansas and Ole Miss to punch their ticket to see who will face Oklahoma. What are your thoughts on so far what we've seen from the College World Series?
Well, I mean, Oklahoma's a machine. They really are. And Ole Miss had been until last night. So Ole Miss, they're fascinating me because they were number one in the country back in March, like early April, like early in the year, and looked unstoppable. And then had some injuries. I think at one point we're like 7-14, something like that, in the SEC. I mean, they looked terrible. They couldn't win a weekend series, and we all just kind of forgot about them. And then they were in Hoover for one day, and they hadn't lost. They didn't lose until last night, so they were 7-0, and a lot of those games won easily. And so, and last night had the bases loaded with no outs in the bottom of the ninth, and in a two-run game. And I think everybody's kind of settling in for, okay, here, now they're going to win. But the reality is Arkansas took care of their business. And now is really fascinating. I mean, first of all, the game is going to be at 3 o'clock, which is a change. But there's a big thunderstorm coming.
Oh.
Would be coming in the middle of the game had it started in the normal, like, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock Eastern slot. So they moved it to the afternoon. And that's fascinating because everybody's tired. You know, the schedule's compressed this year, and I like it because, you know, I like the whole thing taking place in, you know, 9 days instead of 2 weeks. But it's wearing on the teams a little bit. And so there's going to be some creative use of the bullpen if this thing gets out of hand early, which a lot of people seem to think that it's going to. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a sports writer, man. I like everybody to suffer. It makes for good copy.
Well, you're also a UT guy, and they suffered, and we're all sitting here. We were stunned when Notre Dame punched their ticket to Omaha and not Tennessee, and we were trying to figure out the whole next week, was this a fail? Like, how do you a team? But we also went and looked at the numbers, Ryan, as I'm sure you'll point out, and this Arkansas team was in Tennessee's shoes last year. They were the dominant team, and they were the number one team, and they couldn't beat NC State in their super regional, and they didn't go to Omaha, and here they sit one game away from playing for a national championship against Oklahoma. So how do you view UT season?
Well, the example that you have just pointed out is the one that I have used nonstop when talking to my in-laws and my college roommates and my wife and my neighbor, all the Tennessee people, right? I'm just saying, listen, there's something to this. And there's also, you know, it doesn't make you feel any better, but the number one seed has not won the College World Series since 1999, Miami.
Yep.
I mean, that's how long. All the guys that played on a Miami team that played in the big leagues, and there's a bunch of them, they're all retired now. I mean, that's how long ago it was. And the number one seed in the country has now not made it to Omaha 3 years in a row. It was UCLA 3 years ago, pre-COVID. It was Arkansas, like you say, a year ago, and then Tennessee. And so what I say is watch Arkansas because – and I've talked to Dave Van Horn about this, the head coach at Arkansas, about you know, using that as motivation. And sometimes that's kind of what you need. But I think, and being out here and talking to all the baseball people, because this is like the national convention every year for college baseball, regardless of whether your team is here or not. And everyone, when they talk about Tennessee, they talk about focusing on the right things at the right time. And that's kind of, you could kind of see it come off the rails, you know, that weekend against Notre Dame. There were, you know, we all remember there was at least one time during the season where it came off the rails. It came off the rails here in Omaha a year ago when they got eliminated in two games. So it's just, maybe the lesson here is, maybe let's make it a little less about us versus them and the umpires and all that stuff and focus on ball game. You know, you watch Oklahoma and you watch Arkansas and you watch the teams that are still here, Ole Miss. They're not focused on anything other than baseball. And so I think maybe that's the lesson, you know, if we want to go down that road for Tennessee baseball. And the good news is, I mean, Arkansas is showing you the roadmap. You can be right back here and potentially playing for a national championship, you know, a year after, you know, having your heart ripped out.
Ryan, this may be hard for you to gauge, but you just mentioned you have a lot of Tennessee fans in your circles that you're in contact with. We always ask the question here, is what do you think deep down the majority of Tennessee fans would like to see with the conduct of the team? Because it became something that almost overshadowed how great they were on the field, because it became something that people tuned in to see. What are they going to do next with the antics? But you just made a really good practical argument for maybe the best way to win big ultimately. What do you think the fans want to see?
I think the fans want to see them in Omaha, you know, number one. You're the number one team in the country all year, so I think that's probably focus number one. But you can be cocky, and you can flip your bat, and you can be, listen, Ole Miss has no issue flipping a bat. I love Tim Elko. You know, he's the heart and soul of this team. You know, he had a bat flip in the Super Regional. That bat hadn't landed yet. I mean, you can still do those things, but there is a line. And you can do those things, and you can have a good time, and you can, you know, look like a bunch of studs and professional wrestlers and be cool and all that. That's fun. I wrote an essay for today's game about all these teams having fun. Notre Dame with the bananas and, you know, all the stuff Tennessee was doing in the dugout. All that's great. But it can't become the focus. It can become part of who you are, but at the end of the day, you know, if it doesn't lead to you winning on the biggest stage in the biggest moment, and you know, this is a team that didn't lose a weekend series all year, and you know, finished number one, won the tournament, conference tournament, and all, also I'll get all that. But there is a point where it becomes a business trip, and so you can do all those things, but when it comes time to buckle down, and I hate to quote everybody's dad, right? Buckle down. But there is a time when you have to do that. So I think the Tennessee fans want to see a bunch of guys who step out there like they're going to conquer the world, but I also think they would like to see those guys, you know, maintain that focus, because right now it just feels like a razor's edge. Like they fall off that thing, can fall off of it quick, and you got to figure out a way to balance it.
Ryan, you're always good at honing in on the fan bases. Of course, last year Mississippi State had an unbelievable showing in Omaha,
yeah.
And it certainly didn't help. Or it certainly didn't hurt their chances. That helped them come from 1-0 down to beat Vanderbilt. It's amazing to watch Ole Miss and Arkansas. They have tremendous fan bases for baseball, as we know. And now you got them both there head to head. That is really something special.
Yeah, and last night they announced the attendance was right at 25,000, and they said, and this is the biggest crowd, you know, for a like a non-championship College World Series game since 2019, and that game was between so-and-so and Arkansas. I mean, so it's just, it's a, you know, and I was at that bar last night where they're doing the Jell-O shots.
Jell-O
thing,
shots,
and,
yeah.
You know, yeah, and it's, and you know, it, but it's, I know that the rest of the world has SEC fatigue. I get that. I do interviews about it all the time, particularly where I live in the Carolinas. But, you know, my response to that is always, yeah, but there's an energy level that exists and there's a performance level that exists that doesn't live anywhere else. And people don't want to hear that in the Big Ten or Big 12 or Pac-12 or ACC or wherever, the Alliance, but it is what it is. And when an SEC school is in the championship series, which is guaranteed to happen this weekend and has happened, I mean, for the last decade, longer than that, a couple decades, there's an energy level that exists in the city that just doesn't if it's anyone else. And that includes some of the greatest programs in the history of college baseball. So, yeah. And the best part is Ole Miss has never gotten this far in a College World Series. Arkansas has been here before. Oklahoma, a couple of times. It's been a while, but they won this College World Series, you know, in 1994. So they've been there. Ole Miss never been there. Ole Miss had never won two games in Omaha. And now they got a chance to play for a national championship. And as a result, like Mississippi State a year ago, which was the best program that had never won the championship, I mean, I don't know who's left in Mississippi because everybody from Starkville was here last year and everybody from Oxford is here this year. And in the lobby of the hotel, I feel like I'm in Archie Manning's house.
Ryan, of course, Oklahoma and Texas are going to join this party, right? It's interesting Oklahoma is going to be playing whoever wins this game today. But
By the way, for all the haters out there, all the people that Ryan just described, wait till 2025, and if this is the matchup.
Right, and that's where I'm going, Ryan. How much is too much? You know, I'm a little bit worried about that. It's, you know, if the SEC becomes this giant that's so much bigger than anything else going on in the rest of college sports, I don't think that's a good thing.
I wrote a column about this, and I don't think it went over great in Birmingham, but I wrote a column about this when the Oklahoma-Texas news broke in the middle of SEC media days, a year pay. Marty and I, Marty McGee, we were interviewing Sankey. We were recording our annual, you know, talking season specials down at media days. We were in the middle of interviewing Sankey when that news broke from the Houston Chronicle. And it was crazy. I mean, you know, Radio Row, it was bonkers. I always tell about it. It was like the food fight scene from Blazing Saddles. Like, it was just insane from that point forward. And so I wrote a column about that a year ago about, you know, be careful. Because, listen, if you're the SEC and you have the opportunity to add Texas and Oklahoma, you have to do it. You have to do it. Greg Sankey would get fired if he doesn't make that happen. If you're Texas and Oklahoma and you have the opportunity to join the SEC, you have to do it. You have to do it. But the bigger picture of college football, college athletics, I don't know. I really don't know. Now, listen, it's good business for me. I mean, you know, I host a show on the SEC Network. I'll be in a contract year the year they join. Now, I'm all about it, right? I mean, it's good. It's good for me.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the bigger picture of college sports. And so you just hope that, you know, Sankey and who my respect for him is well documented. You know, you hope that they keep that in mind. And you know, Greg Sankey's also, you know, co-chair of this committee that's determining the future of what the NCAA is going to be. So,
yeah.
So I know he's concerned about that. But I mean, Nick Saban's the one that said it. You know, I don't know if this is great for college sports. And he said it's great for us. He's talking about NIL and transfer and everything. He said it's great for Alabama. And Kirby Smart said it's great for Georgia. But I don't know if all this stuff is great for collegiate athletics in general. But it's you know, we'll see. But yeah, SEC fatigue, folks. That's only going to get. I'm not sure what the alliance is planning on doing. I put that in air quotes, by the way. But it's only going to get worse for them in a couple of years
for sure. I just finished up Ozark. Ryan, enjoy. You'll probably find some Ozark mullets out there in Omaha. So I know you've been on mullet watch.
So I tweeted the Omaha World Herald, phenomenal newspaper. I think they do the best job of any. Yeah, I go to the Indy 500, I go to Daytona, I go to all these events that are owned by the city. The World Herald does the best job with this event. They posted a picture of this kid last night. I tweeted it last night. I've never seen anything like it. Like, it's the greatest mullet I've ever seen. Like,
that kid's probably nine, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, he had an MTV shirt. Like, his dad, I don't know who his parents are, or they were his guardians. They were doing it right. So, yeah. Anyhow, that kid. I call it the Missouri River mud flap because Missouri River's right by the ballpark. I'm telling you, it was. I'm gonna go in the stands and find that kid today. It's amazing. I wish I could go back in time and attempt to do that.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up. I laughed when I saw that tweet from you. So
yeah,
well done.
It was amazing. And listen, there are rednecks everywhere. I learned when I moved to Connecticut years ago, right out of Knoxville. I moved to Connecticut to ESPN. I remember calling my dad one night, going, "You know, I just realized something." He said, "What?" I said, "It doesn't matter where you live. He said, "There's rednecks everywhere." I said, "It's exactly right." And heaven knows we got them out here in Lewis and Clark country.
No doubt about it. Enjoy the rest of the College World Series. Good to talk to you as always. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, boys. Thanks.
Ryan McGee, good stuff from him, as always, from ESPN. We'll come back and continue on. But first, Willie, you've got a word about Loan Pronto.
All right, let's talk Loan Pronto. In this time, we know the gas prices, the cost of living right now, it's not easy. And so if you have some high-interest loans, you might be feeling that a little bit right now. And so Loan Pronto can relieve that pressure. They have a formula that can help you get down to zero when it comes to credit card debt and those loans. You can reset this thing. It's a fast, easy home refi from Loan Pronto. You can get this cash out of your home's equity in as little as 2 weeks and get a check for $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 to pay off the credit cards, pay off your car loan, pay off other high interest debts that you might have, and just have one lower monthly payment. And even if your home mortgage goes up a point or two, it's offset by the credit card rate going to zero. So most people that do this see the monthly savings of $800 to $900 a month from Loan Pronto. So call them right now and unlock that equity and attack that bad debt. Do it now. You can even skip your next two house payments altogether. So call 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. 615-499-5780. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
Good stuff, Ryan McGee. Always fun with him. He's out in Omaha at the College World Series. Arkansas and Ole Miss. The winner moves on to take on Oklahoma. And he described Oklahoma as a machine. Was he talking about the softball team or their men's baseball team? I don't know, because both have looked like machines, right?
Oh, yeah. No question.
That softball team was. Woo!
Yep. They won that whole thing, and they ripped
times
through everybody.
Made it look very, very easy at times. They were that good. So I don't know. Pretty interesting. Ole Miss has not been in this spot before. Arkansas, look, I would think, and I don't know this, I would think Tennessee fans will be rooting for Arkansas, right, so they can use that as the example for next year. Or I don't know. I don't know how they feel, because that is going to be the example. I mean, even if Arkansas doesn't complete it, they got there this year. They're here at the very end or very close to the end, at the doorstep of the end. And this is the example Tennessee fans are going to use. I'm sure it's the example Tony Vitello and the baseball program is going to use of, we have to use this as the same motivation Arkansas did. They followed up their disappointment by getting to Omaha the next year, and we'll see how this all plays out. You know, maybe they win a national championship. Maybe they lose in the national championship game. But that is going to be their motivation. That is going to be a narrative they're certainly going to be throwing out there going into next season.
Yeah, I think so. And I was interested in Ryan's perspective on what he thinks Tennessee fans would like to see with their conduct. It's two different questions, right? Tony Vitello has got to decide, what's a better way to win a championship? Do we need to tweak the way we conduct ourselves? Do I need to put a little bit more of a boundary on how my players act? And that's a separate question from, you know, what, as if you absolutely love that school, you have unconditional love. That's about how most people are about their favorite college team, right? You have an unconditional love for your team, but that doesn't mean you can't say, you know, I'd prefer them not to act a certain way. I'd prefer things aren't a certain way. You can do both, right? You can still love your school, but also say, you know, it's not my favorite thing, how that goes. Another thing I'm curious about, Darren, is something that Ryan mentioned about the fatigue, the SEC fatigue.
Yep.
And this is where I'm coming from when I, and because you heard me loud and clear last year when that news came down about Oklahoma and Texas, I was 100% against it. I don't think it's a good thing. And part of what I think is exactly what is materializing. You just mentioned Oklahoma's got an unbelievable softball program. They've got a great baseball program. They could win it. That, Texas, you know is going to be a national title contender in a ton of sports. If every year it gets to the point where it's only the SEC teams competing for the title in a large, large portion of the sports, why would anybody outside of the league care? Like, I'm talking about mass audiences for national championship tournament watching teams. You know, for if you're trying to catch that fan who's a casual fan, who might be a fan of University of Pittsburgh or Washington State or University of Colorado, if those teams are never in the mix or nobody from their league is ever in the mix, why would you watch? You're not going to watch. So you're not going to get a mass audience. So you need to, I think, spreading the competitiveness around the leagues is important. And so I do think that's going to hurt college athletics, even though we know it's a knockout. The SEC is going to be a superpower, but they already are a superpower. So that's why I'm against the Oklahoma-Texas thing.
Well, and it looks like the internet is breaking right now. I mean, I think it's on tilt because it is social media. Twitter has exploded, and it's along the lines of what we're talking about because, as we talked about with Ryan McGee, in 2025, there are two programs that are going to be joining the SEC, and they are Oklahoma and
Tejas,
Texas.
That team and in Austin. Mr. Manning. Yeah.
And the number one player in the 2023 class has chosen. His name is Arch Manning. Maybe.
University
sound
of
familiar?
Texas.
He has chosen the University of Texas, yes. The other UT, the one in Austin, that he'll be playing in the SEC when he's at Texas. He chose Texas over Georgia and Alabama. And it is literally breaking the internet right now.
It is going wild. It is
something. That like every tweet I see is Arch Manning is going
timing.
To Texas.
We did not plan this to have Ryan McGee on talking about SEC fatigue and then have this happen, but boy, does it ever fall in line.
I know. Wow.
And you kind of knew Arch Manning was probably going to play somewhere in the league. But man, I've always kind of wondered what goes through his mind. You know, where does he want to be? You've got so many places that kind of probably feel that they're almost entitled to have him. And here he's going to go to Texas. Wow.
He's going to Texas. Arch
Did
Manning,
you see that coming? I would not have guessed.
No.
I would not have guessed Texas.
I knew that Texas was heavily in the mix. I just didn't think ultimately he would choose them. This is the number one recruit in 2023.
So he's class of 23?
I think
right?
That's right.
He just completed his junior year, so he'll be a senior in high school next year.
I believe so.
So he'll graduate in the spring of 23. He'll be on the campus in the fall of 23. All right, so he'll play outside of the SEC, in theory. I don't know if he'll play his first year, but who knows? I mean, he's such a high-level recruit. You figure he's got a chance, but wow. The question, too, is in this day and age, even though he's probably given this all kinds of thought, he's got an unbelievable circle of people helping him. Will he finish at Texas? Remember a guy named Chris Sims? Started at Texas. But was that the best
Chris
decision for him?
Was Chris the number one recruit in the country?
Yes.
He was?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't remember him. I mean, I knew he was a five-star. I didn't know he was literally the number one recruit.
I think he was close. Remember, he turned down Tennessee and went to Texas.
Yep. Well, we've had that conversation with him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got great perspective on that.
Well, the
because in this day and age, if you don't like how it's going, you certainly can change scenery in a hurry, and that may or may not be the best. This could be good, could be bad.
It is now breaking on SportsCenter. I mean, it is everywhere.
Man, yeah, it's a big can't get.
So you know what people are going to be saying now? Texas, they're back. They are back. Finally, they're back.
Like they never left.
Like they never left.
Well,
that's right.
And here's the thing about Manning, right? You wouldn't think it would have been like all about NIL or guaranteed money through NIL up front with him, you wouldn't think. But I don't know that. You know, in this modern day world of recruiting, what were the things that attracted Arch Manning to Texas? Because as you said, Texas has not been, they've not been on top, right? It's almost like he's taken the challenge of, I want to get Texas back on top.
Yeah. Well, just so people understand, everybody knows he's a Manning. This is the son of Cooper.
Right.
Son of Cooper, not Peyton or Eli. He is, of course, Cooper is there is the brother of Eli and Peyton, but
yeah.
It is Cooper's son, Arch.
Yeah.
Yep, that's correct. All right, we will come back. Chris Storch, every year this time, the NBA draft is tonight. We talk about some of the guys that we watched in college basketball, especially the ones in the SEC, that will get selected tonight, and some of them get selected really high. He knows a thing or two about them. From Blue Ribbon, we'll do that next here on the DDC. Back here on the DDC on this hot Thursday here in Nashville, Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. We always enjoy our conversations with Chris Storch. Blue Ribbon basketball, NBA draft is tonight. And of course, this also does work on NBA TV. And it looks like we've been talking about the SEC a lot here today on the show. Of course, the big news, Arch Manning commits to Texas. That's the son of Cooper Manning, the number one overall college football recruit in 2023. And he has decided to take his talents to Austin, which will have Longhorns fans saying, "We're back, finally." Chris, how we doing?
Doing well. So just saw that about Arch Manning. I don't pretend to be a football expert by any means, but I was that was a kind of a curious choice, I guess. But maybe the kid wants to blaze his own path.
Well, they will be in the SEC in 2025. So I mean,
they will indeed. Yeah.
So there is that. But, yeah, a little bit of a surprise. Are you a little bit, speaking of surprised, a little surprised that Jabari Smith seems to be what certainly the odds makers believe he is going to get picked number one overall tonight? Surprised or not surprised by the Magic?
Not surprised. By the way, the Oracle, Woj from ESPN, decreed that the first three picks are set. So I'm going to go with him.
Okay.
When Kobe got killed in that wreck, I didn't believe anybody until I saw him tweet it. So it looks like Jabari Smith will go number one. You know, Jay Billis said this last year, and I don't know, people like to engage with him. But he said Jabari Smith is Kevin Durant-like. So, you know, if that's true, maybe there's just one KD. I don't know. I don't think he's anywhere close to the rebounder Durant was, especially on the offensive glass. But you just can't pass up a guy like this, especially the way the game is going, where your bigs, if you could even call him a big, shoot from the outside. There's a lot of spacing. He's going to be able to do a lot of things. He can put the ball on the floor. You know, some people say that his ability to create isn't yet proven, but I know that he can. And I just think it's – if you're Orlando and you don't take him, it could be one of those epic things like when Michael Jordan went, you know, fell to third. You know, I don't think he's a Michael Jordan, but that doesn't surprise me at all. The one thing that it's got to be tough, though, because Chet Holmgren, the 7-1 center from Gonzaga, is a unicorn player. I've read, you know, glowing stuff about him, and people say we have never had a prospect like him. And the thing about it, he has so many skills. I mean, he can block shots, he can rebound, defensive rebound, take it up the floor and score or pass it, makes threes at a high clip. The only thing about him, he's 195 pounds on a 7-1 frame.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys, there are just some people, I'm not one of them, but there are just some people that no matter what they do, they can't gain weight. And he may be one of them. So the big question is that 7-1, 195, or even if he gets up to 205, which is still painfully thin, can he handle the beating in the league? So that's the question about him. And then Paolo Banchero, probably going to be taken third by the Rockets. I think he's a do-everything guy. He's not quite the jump shooter that Jabari Smith is, and I think that that's what separates him from being number one. And Jabari, I think, firmly in that spot taken by the Magic.
I've seen stuff, Chris, where a lot of people are projecting there's a real shot that Kennedy Chandler could stay in the state and go late first round to the Memphis Grizzlies. One, what do you think of that? And two, what do you think overall of Chandler's play?
Well, you know, they've already got a good point guard there, I hear.
Yeah, I've heard he's going to make it. I think he's going to make it.
I think he might do okay, you know, give him a little time. Kennedy, if he's okay playing behind that, I've actually seen him drop out of the first round in several mock drafts. Now, I never do a mock draft. The main thing that I do is I put together a research book for NBA TV. It ends up being about 600 pages. So I get into it okay, but not – I don't come at it from the standpoint of NBA front offices, because as you guys know, I've spent all my career covering college basketball. So, but what I've seen in the mocks is that he has fallen out of the first round in most of them. Hmm. Now, I love him as a player. The thing that people can't get past is that he's 6 feet. But he showed out great at the combine. You know, his athletic gifts are off the charts. His wingspan isn't quite as long as what they said it was in college, but it's still plus at 6'5". So he's long, he's quick, he's a ball hawk. I think he shoots it much better than his critics give him credit for. I was pleasantly surprised by how well he shot it in his only college season. So, I don't know. It'd be good for Memphis to, I mean, if Ja goes down or needs a blow, I think Kennedy's an NBA player and an NBA contributor, but I think people are just a little scared off by his size.
We're talking to Chris Dortch from Blue Ribbon College Sports, and we're giving some people a little preview of the draft tonight. And you know, Chris, we've gone round and round here, as you can imagine, about the uniqueness of Scottie Pippen. I don't know that he's going to get drafted tonight, but he's such a unique player the way he plays. We had Penny Collins, the head coach at Tennessee State, told us yesterday he doesn't know if he's going to get drafted, but he really does believe that he'll end up in the NBA one way or the other. Based on what he's done, you know, being evaluated since the end of the season, what kind of ground do you think he's gained or lost based on that?
Willie, I think Chris got zapped. That little, I think he got zapped. So I know Elijah. Okay, I think he's back. So you might want to ask that again. Brian Penny Collins, I'm sure Chris didn't hear it, was on our show yesterday, TSU's men's basketball coach, and he made a point to go where Willie's going with this about Scottie Pippen Jr. So, Willie, I'll let you kind of ask it again.
Yeah, he really seems to like Scottie Pippen Jr. He thinks at some point he'll make it. He just thinks he has what it takes eventually. I'm just curious, what kind of evaluation has there been on him since the end of the season?
That's a good question, Willie. Similar to Kennedy Chandler, I think his stock has dropped a little bit. I've seen him in a lot of mock drafts, or left out of a lot of mock drafts. If he was 2 inches taller, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I think he's a winner. He's obviously a scoring point. He's aggressive getting to the rim. His free throw percentage needs to tick up a few notches. Not afraid to take the big shot. Good teammate. I think a skilled passer, although he was asked to score a lot. So, you know, he's an NBA player in my estimation, but, you know, whether he gets drafted, I don't know. A lot of these guys that do the mocks, they talk to the scouts and player personnel directors and stuff. And, again, that's not my area. But if you don't see a guy in several mock drafts, somebody knows something. And wouldn't surprise me if he ends up signing a free agent deal, which really could be better for him. I think his agent would tell you that, because then they can pick and choose.
Yeah, that seems to be something that gets talked about every year, Chris, is do you really want to be picked in the second round when it comes down to it? Because
that's right.
Sometimes it is better to go to a place where you could kind of you can have a little bit more say. True?
That's right. I mean, the thing about it is, and I've never, I followed the draft since I was a kid, and you know, Major League Baseball draft, NFL draft, just love the draft. And I always thought, man, what if you don't want to live in whatever town it is that has the first pick? You're just screwed. I mean, unless you just want to bail out of the draft and come back next year, work out on your own. But so to me, rather than be a mid to late second round pick, I'd almost rather, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing. I remember Jordan Bone a couple of years ago, his brother was about to make a mea culpa on tape. They had a party, and he was saying, man, I'm sorry, I'm the one that got him into this. And then behind him on the TV screen, he was getting drafted. But, yeah, rather than get drafted that late, I'd almost rather have a good agent. And I have gotten to know a few agents, and several have told me, and obviously I'm not hanging with the big dog agents, but they have their own boutique agencies, and they'll tell me if I've got a fringe draft guy, I would much rather he didn't get picked. And then it's kind of a bidding war because it's like, wow, this guy didn't get drafted, and then all of a sudden you've got six or eight NBA teams that are inquiring about you, and you can kind of pick and choose.
So we'll see how that happens tonight. Chris, any other things you're looking for before we let you go from this first round? Players from our circles in SEC country or any other twists you think we should be looking for tonight was the draft goes? We're always used to having about 12 trades, and you have this, you know, it's going to take place in a few weeks, but they're going to trade this guy for this guy, and the hats get all screwed up and everything like that. So we always expect that.
Yeah, it's nuts how it happens. I'm curious, Willie, about Shaedon Sharpe from Kentucky. He's a lottery pick in everybody's estimation. 6'6", can shoot it. But who knows? He didn't play last year. The plan was for him to join Kentucky, sit out, and play this year. He decided not to, got into the draft. And it'll be really interesting to see where he ends up. And I wonder, talking about the SEC, Jalen Williams from Arkansas. He's such a good utility guy. Some people have him in the first round. Some people have him falling into the second. I'm curious to see what NBA teams think of his value because I think he does a lot of things that don't show up in box scores.
Yep, good stuff. As always, Chris, appreciate it. We'll see how it all plays out tonight, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Chris Dorch, Blue Ribbon, does a fantastic job covering college basketball. And, of course, some guys from the SEC, you just heard it, Shaedon Sharpe, who did not play a game this year for Kentucky, and I guess he's still listed as a player at Kentucky, could get to be a lottery pick tonight. The plan was for him to play this year, and he decided to go on and take his talents to the next level. And if he gets to be a lottery pick, get paid more probably than what he would have made at Kentucky. We'll come back, wrap up the second hour of the DDC, and we'll do that next. Let's do this. Let's go on and give away some tickets to see Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Poison, and Joan Jett at Nissan Stadium in a week. It's going to be a huge stadium show. And caller 7, caller 7, 615-737-1025. That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Lucky caller 7. Call in. Elijah Campbell will be waiting for that call at the Hillside Medical Games studio. And whoever has been listening, you weren't prompted, you weren't told when we were going to give these away, you just were listening. You're going to get rewarded to go see that awesome show in a week. We're going to have Robbie Stanley join us to begin the third hour. He was at the Bill Haslam presser today. Herb Fritch was in attendance. David Poyle was in attendance. And we're going to talk about what went on there. Of course, Bill Haslam will join us today at 1:15. To discuss the future of the Predators. And with that being said, Willie, there were some comments that we'll get into with Robbie to begin the third hour as the phone lines explode from David Poyle. That is interesting. David Poyle said something has to give for Philip Forsberg to sign with the Predators. What do you make of that? Are you willing to go down 3% because of those comments?
Well, the little tidbit that he said that was somewhat newsworthy, and I think we all assume this, but he did say they've offered him 8 years. And I keep coming back to this. That is the best.
Was that really
that
in question?
Offer.
Was that really in question,
no,
though?
It was not in question, but.
But you're right. He did say it at least. Yeah.
He said it, but he. Yep. But I think if you read his comments in there, what he's saying is that's the advantage they have. Here's the quote, and I'm reading this out of the Tennessean. We're taking a position that we feel we're offering the right thing. They're taking a position where they think it should be more than that. They're not wrong, and with all due respect, I'm not wrong. Something has got to give in the next couple of weeks for Philip to sign. He did say that they've offered an 8-year deal, and I'm looking for the one other quote that he had in here. And I think he reiterated in somewhere in this conversation, we'll get the clarification from Robbie, that got discussed quite a bit. He's not signing, here it is, he's not signing with us for anything less than 8 years. Asked if the situation was nerve-wracking, Poile agreed. It's because you have to have a plan B, C, or D, or on other things. Our first choice, I want to be clear, is to sign Philip. We've told him that. We've told his agent that, but we have to formulate other plans right now. So I don't think I've changed my percentage, Darren, at all, one way or the other, based on these comments. I saw that Philip continues to hang out in Nashville. He was actually doing things with the Predators Foundation here recently, the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So there has to be some optimism, but I think we know that, you know, crunch time is going to come. They've got a couple more weeks here before it really hits. I think once the calendar turns to July, then it's time to really get serious. And I just don't see how at this point you can let him walk. They've come so far down this road. I think everything that they're saying is true, that they're preparing. Well, what if we didn't do this? I don't see anything on the horizon that looks really good. There was one interesting thing that Elliot and Jeff Merrick said on their podcast earlier this morning that popped, that Winnipeg, Pierre-Luc Dubois apparently wants to hit free agency. Now, he's a little younger, right? That's an interesting one. I think we all assumed that he would re-up with the Jets. But if you're looking at plan B, C, or D, it continues to be a fluid situation, and I do think that's why you're waiting to see if anything else continues to change in the next couple of weeks. But I keep coming back to the same thing. I don't think plan B, C, or D is better without Philip Forsberg in the mix. So I don't know what the gap is, but they've set it out there. I think they believe that their 8-year deal that they've offered him, whatever it is going to be better than what he could get on the free market. But only time will tell.
No one is going to disagree with the statement that you just put out there. But where the disagreement is going to come is at what cost. And you cannot be into the camp of what I've thrown out there before. Like you can't say give him whatever he wants. Like, this is a business. And you don't know what the business is behind the scenes. And so no one's going to push back on it doesn't look better without him in the mix. But it may look better with him not in the mix if they are worlds apart. If the number is so out there that they don't have a choice, you don't know that. And I don't know that. And there is something going on behind the scenes. They're not $100,000 apart, okay? Let's just go on and say that. They're not $100,000 apart, or we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation. They are clearly pretty far apart. And now you're starting to hear stuff from both sides, which tells me another thing, an indicator of they're not really that close. Because typically when things are quiet, you're working behind the scenes. When things start trickling out there, it means somebody is getting frustrated. And they're trying to push or nudge the other side. and things are now starting to get out there, which tells me they're really not that close. And 8 days is what we're 8 days away from that marker you just said, getting to July and flipping the calendar. Well, that's 8 days from now. And
here's one thing that I will I'd love to get Robbie's perspective on, but this is a theory I have now. I wonder how much the Predators have tried to sell Philip Forsberg on the cost of living and the money you keep here, the lack of the state income tax, etc. And I'm wondering if Philip Forsberg, unlike a lot of his teammates in the past, has not gone for that. Like, I wonder if that's affecting what the Predators are offering him. Because it looks like the Predators have offered something a lot lower than Philip thought he was going to get from Nashville. The eighth year is part of it. I wonder how much this is how much you save, because you can quantify how much you save, but that doesn't mean that Philip and his agent have to play by those rules.
Right? I'm just telling you, those comments by David Poile tell me, just from dealing with this in the past and covering this stuff as long as we have, this tells me he's frustrated. This tells me things are not going as planned. And indeed, yeah, what you said is right. 8 days, both sides are frustrated, which tells me they're not really that close. And we're 8 days away from July 1st, and we are, 3 weeks away from the free agency period. And when you really get down to it, 3 weeks is not that long, especially if you're really not that close. And I don't know what's going to change that, because that was today, to me, David trying to nudge them to get, hey, need you to come a little bit our way. And I don't know. I don't know if they will ultimately or not. You know, we've talked about Philip Forsberg's presence in the community over the last several weeks. Is that a sign of good things? I kind of viewed it as a sign of good things, but that doesn't guarantee that this is going to get done. To me, today, those comments by David Poile is probably telling us, boy, I don't know. This thing is starting to get pretty hairy. And we'll get Robbie's perspective, because he was a part of this today. And so we'll find out what exactly was said. And we'll do that to begin the third hour of the DDC. That's next.